Chapter 11. In Living Stereo. Why We Have Two Ears. In 1996, I began corresponding with a Norwegian physician, Dr. Jorgen Jorgensen, who had written to tell me that his appreciation of music had been altered suddenly and radically when he lost all hearing in the right ear after removal of an acoustic neuroma in the sensory nerve. The perception of the specific qualities of music, pitch, timbre, did not change, he wrote. However, my emotional reception of music was impaired. It was curiously flat and two-dimensional. Mahler's music, in particular, had once had a shattering effect on him, but when he went to a concert soon after his surgery and heard Mahler's Seventh Symphony, it sounded hopelessly flat and lifeless. After 6 months or more, he began to adapt to this. I gained a pseudo-stereo effect, which, although it cannot have been as it used to be, gave me ample compensation. The music was not stereo, but it was all the same broad and rich. So in the opening funeral march of Mahler's Fifth, after the trumpet announces the gloomy depth of a funeral procession, the full orchestra fortissimo, I was almost lifted out of the chair. This may be my own psychological adjustment to the loss, Dr. Jorgensen added, but our brain is a wonderful instrument. Hearing fibers may have crossed in the corpus callosum to receive input from my functioning left ear. I also believe my left ear is better than should be expected from a 70-year-old. When we listen to music, as Daniel Levitin has written, we are actually perceiving multiple attributes or dimensions. Among these, he includes tone, pitch, timbre, loudness, tempo, rhythm, and contour, the overall shape, the up and down of melodies. One speaks of an amusia when the perception of some or all of these qualities is impaired, but Dr. Jorgensen was not amusic in this sense. His perception in the unaffected left ear was normal. Levitin goes on to speak of two other dimensions. Spatial location, he writes, is the perception of how distant the source is from us, in combination with how large a room or hall the music is in. It distinguishes the spaciousness of singing in a large concert hall from the sound of singing in your shower. And reverberation, he writes, has an underappreciated role in communicating emotion and creating an overall pleasing sound. It was precisely these qualities that Dr. Jorgensen missed when he lost the ability to hear in stereo. When he went to a concert, he found that it lacked spaciousness, voluminousness, richness, resonance, and this rendered the music flat and lifeless. I was struck here by the analogy to the experience of those who lose the use of one eye, and with this their ability to see depth stereoscopically. I have described such a case at length in my essay, Stereo Sue. The resonances of losing stereoscopy can be unexpectedly far-reaching, causing not only a problem in judging depth and distance, but a flattening of the whole visual world, a flattening that is both perceptual and emotional. People in this situation speak of feeling disconnected, of a difficulty in relating themselves not only spatially but emotionally to what they are seeing. The return of binocular vision, if this occurs, can thus give great pleasure and relief, as the world once again seems visually and emotionally rich. Yet even if there is no restoration of binocular vision, there may be a slow change, an adaptation analogous to what Dr. Jorgensen described, the development of a pseudo-stereo effect. It is important to emphasize the word pseudo-stereo. Genuine stereo perception, either visual or auditory, depends on the brain's ability to infer depth and distance, and such qualities as rotundity, spaciousness, and voluminousness from the disparities between what is transmitted by the two individual eyes or ears, a spatial disparity in the case of the eyes, a temporal disparity in the case of the ears. Tiny differences are involved here. Spatial disparities of a few arc seconds with vision or of microseconds with hearing. This allows some animals, especially nocturnal predators like owls, to construct a veritable sound map of the environment. We humans are not up to this standard, but we nevertheless use binaural disparities, no less than visual cues, for orienting ourselves, for judging or forming impressions of what lies around us. It is stereophony that allows concertgoers to enjoy the full complexity and acoustic splendor of an orchestra or a choir performing in a concert hall designed to make listening as rich, subtle, and three-dimensional as possible, an experience we try to recreate as best we can with two earphones or stereo speakers or surround sound. We tend to take our stereo world for granted, and it requires a mishap like Dr. Jorgensen's to bring home, starkly and suddenly, the huge but often overlooked importance of having two ears.